All right, so I'm podcasting again. I know I take hiatuses, but, you know, this is what geniuses do. I go through creative pain, you know, that's what I do. I go through pain for you people. Anyhow, so this podcast, we're going to be discussing cryptocurrencies, investing, mostly in investing in modern times, as well as cryptocurrencies. I'm quickly going to go over FTX, right? And then I'm going to finish off by talking about Canadian real estate because it's the most painful, right? Okay. All right. That's the intro. All right. So I wanted to talk about how much strategy has changed in terms of investing in capital markets over, let's say, the last, 15 to 5 to 3 to 2 years, right? Because obviously things have significantly changed from, let's say, specifically 2010 as a reference point, right? So what I have noticed at heart, right, is that as an investor, whether you are a retail investor, whether you're an institutional investor, whether you are managing money, you essentially need to be a lot more comfortable with risk if you're looking to get higher and more aggressive returns and not have clients leave your business, right? So in my opinion, you've seen a lot of the industry, and again, I said across the board, whether it be institutional or the retail investor, take on a whole lot more risk. So in my opinion, I think that you're traditionally what you had is that you saw a lot of, let's say, investors in 2010 have a lot of exposure to things like 60-40 blend funds that were 60% equities, 40% bonds, because essentially you're able to win on both sides, because when equities go up, bonds go down, and when bonds go up, equities go down, and either way you're getting a yield or a dividend on both sides, right? So you're not just getting your initial investment going up, you're able to, like, your principal, you're actually able to get like some income off of it as well too. Now that is very important for older investors or investors that have a smaller time horizon, because if you're not working or you're in retirement, it's very important for you to make an income, because that's very useful capital for you, right? Now on top of that, right, so like essentially what happened is that as interest rates went down, that allowed more capital to be available in the market, and all that capital essentially was put into more into investments that were able to provide more aggressive returns. Generally you saw a lot of tech companies do a lot of well over, like, let's say it's the last 12 years, 10 to 15, 12 years, right? So, you know, you have your FANG stocks that have done really well, your Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google, Spotify's, Tesla's, everything to that extent, right? And the weird thing is that because of that, basically every single product has essentially had overexposure to things of that nature, right? So even everyone right now wants to be a Cathie Woods and be super aggressive and have all their exposure to like high growth, high tech growth names, right? To the point even where like people like Morningstar have ratios that show you how non-correlative the product you're buying is to the general market, because everything is pretty much the same at this point now, right? And now the issue with that is that with everyone and when the whole market's is comfortable and exposed to risk, basically you're going to see a lot more oscillations. You're going to see a lot more Jesus, I can't even think right now. You're gonna see like the boss. Okay, so what am I thinking of right now? Oh my god, my brain's gone. Volatility. Yeah, so you're going to see a lot of volatility. You're going to see a lot of volatility when you have a high exposure to risk, right? So you need to be comfortable with the volatility. Now, the issue with that essentially is that depending on where your exit point is, where your exit point is for your strategy is that, you know, you may not be at that right point in the parabola depending on your time horizon. So if you're willing to take on a lot of exposure to risk, it basically only makes sense if you have a longer time horizon to invest, right? Now, the issue with that, like I said, is when the whole market essentially has exposure to high risk, a lot of people like the baby boomers who are in large mass entering retirement cannot deal with volatility. They need to have a steady amount of income in retirement, especially at a time right now where inflation is as high as it is, and they're not able to do things like refinance their homes because interest rates have been able to increase to a ridiculous extent where, you know, fixed income rates in some parts are like 5%. So it's like, if not more, because you need to qualify with a flippin' stupid test or whatever, right? So, you know, times are pretty tough. People are taking on a lot more risk, right? So people have gone essentially, like, so the bond market has been killed for a while because interest rates have been so low. There's been no real yield. And essentially because, like, you know, the central bank of the U.S. has been doing TARP, and like a lot of other like central banks have either been going negative or essentially they have basically programs where they like buy back their own bonds, right? There's really no buyer in the bond market anyhow, right? So the yields have been pretty crap. So, like, you know, no one really wants to have exposure there. And, you know, dividend paying names aren't doing really well, especially after COVID, right? So people right now are a lot more willing to have exposure to risk. That's why you're sort of seeing, you know, a lot of people in tech names. And that's why you see, you know, when news comes out about any tech name that, you know, the whole market goes down. Because basically a lot of people have exposure to the same thing. Like, there is absolutely no diversity right now, right? And I'm not even talking about private markets because that is absolutely Pandora's hell. Private markets, because they have less of a jurisprudence or a reason to actually disclose financial information. Oh my God, you do not want to know. You do not want to know. If people are actually appalled by FTX, you do not know what is happening in most venture capital firms. You have no idea how... I don't mean to laugh. That's actually like not right, but like... Like, honestly, like, that's another conversation itself. But in my opinion, in order to capture yield right now, or in order to capture alpha right now, a lot of people are willing to take on a crazy amount of risk. And if I'm being quite honest, there are some firms that have quite literally psychopaths that are discretionary portfolio managers and are doing crazy things, like putting apparently $95 million of an Ontario teacher's pension plan, right, into FTX. At what point is that, is compliance allowing that, regardless of it, right? But what you need to understand is that people are willing to take on a lot more risk, and again, because of that, there's gonna be a lot more volatility, just like my emotions going up the last second, and there's gonna be a lot more scams. The other thing I wanted to speak on is that I think right now it would be like really good for a lot of people to get really, you know, to get educated on blockchain technology specifically first, right? And then to understand, like, you know, your mainstream cryptocurrencies, and then to understand exchanges, and then to understand decentralized finance, right? I think in those steps, it'll be very important, because that'll basically discern you from a lot of investors if you understand that, because how you make money is in inefficient markets, right? And right now, generally, a lot of crypto markets are inefficient, which is why you're seeing things like FTX happen. I should also add, in my opinion, FTX is highly speculative just because of that Sam Bankman-Fried. Literally, this guy's parents are like, this is the last person, right? Like, this guy had Gary Gensler, right? Like, you know, head commissioner of the SEC, working with him to find loopholes to be able to like become a regulated exchange, right? So I think that's a very sketchy scenario. But regardless, what I am trying to say here is that what will actually discern you as a prominent investor in 2022 is having an adequate understanding of blockchain technology and cryptocurrencies, okay, right? So first, blockchain technology, right, and cryptocurrencies, right? So I think, yeah, those are very important things, because I think what's going to happen quickly is that a lot of regulators are going, a lot of mainstream financial institutions like banks and broker dealers are going to have to quickly integrate blockchain technology and cryptocurrencies, because they provide too many efficiencies, right, for capital not to leave, so business not to leave them to go to crypto markets, right? Because we are entering, you know, generally in my, so like, I think there was a stat the other day on Bloomberg that said there was 100% chance of a recession in the US in like the next 12 months, right? So we're entering a time, in my opinion, where you're going to see a lot more yield chasing. And I am actually very bullish on another bull run in crypto markets. And I do think, right, there's going to be a couple of things that happen, right, that there's going to be a lot of money to be made, again, in crypto markets. And as a regulatory, from a regulatory perspective, two things are going to happen. regulators are going to overregulate and underregulate. And what I mean by that, right, is that regulators are essentially going to, because they don't understand anything about crypto, overregulate and basically put on some inefficient policies that create too many burdens and barriers to entry that essentially drive business to, in my opinion, what will become the gray market, not the black market, just because the market will be so prone to go there, right? And I also think that like banks and broker dealers are going to have to integrate blockchain technology and cryptocurrency quickly so they also don't lose business, right? Because I honestly think like things like decentralized finance and also decentralized exchanges, right, like are too much of a salacious opportunity for investors, right? If anybody has actually, I really like Binance's platform for DeFi. I know there's probably a lot better ones, right? But if you have been on a good DeFi platform, you basically ask yourself, why do I have a wealth management advisor, right? So in my opinion, there's too many efficiencies that are provided by decentralized finances and DAX for a lot of legacy and traditional financial institutions not to integrate them. And I also think that honestly, from like a regulatory perspective, regulators are going to have a hard time dealing with this whole market because people who make money in crypto are not going to the public sector, right? And it is a niche area for education, right? So right now, basically a lot of regulators are blind because everybody that's making money is not going to the public sector, they're going to the private sector, right? So that's why I think this is a highly inefficient market and there's a lot of money to be made for people who are actually educated and capable of like making money in this market, right? And I so that's what I think about that. And I believe that's it for the moment. You know what? So I wanted to talk about FTX. There's still a portion of it I don't understand specifically is the FTT token and like a lot of around that. And honestly, a lot of the derivative trading that was happening there as well too. What I will say, honestly, is this. This is a sketchy story to me because this Sam Friedman Bankman character, right? This is another scenario. How many Theranoses have happened? How many Fyre Fests have happened? To be quite frank, we all love him, but like, you know, Elon Musk, all of these eccentric hype lords, right? And to be honest, right? Like, are bamboozling a lot of solid investors, right? And the thing that bothers me, and I'm not trying to say Elon Musk is a scam artist, so I shouldn't put him in this class, but I will go back to like Elizabeth Holmes and Theranos. And there has been, honestly, like a large number of people who are like this, right? This Sam Fried Bankman character, though, he has two parents. He has one parent. His mother is essentially the managing director of this nonprofit called Mind the Gap. It's like one of these very prominent DNC nonprofits that's always pushing their ideas, right? And basically providing money to campaigns and raising money for campaigns and their cause and everything to that extent, right? And his father essentially is one of the foremost academic leaders in tax law in the US. That's actually like his parents were how he was able to work with Gary Gensler, one of the top commissioners at the SEC, right? To find loopholes to be able to get FTX be one of the most like mainstream, one of the top mainstream used and like regulated exchanges, right? So my thing, the reason in me bringing this up is that like this, from like a market perspective, should have been the last fund, the last exchange that did this, right? Now, the reason why I say this is because, for example, you have like all the other ones, which are like Binance and all like there's a whole bunch. Honestly, I'm not going to go down the whole like, you know, KuCoin and, you know, like you have your Canadian ones, your ShakePays. And like there's so many stories actually of like, you know, these rug pulls happening. In Canada, we already had one called Quadriga. Anybody that's actually a Canadian investor laughs every time they hear Quadriga because it's also a crazy story as well. $250 million lost completely, right? Complete rug pull, right? And the guy, from a lot of people's understanding, faked his death. Search it yourself. Quite the fun rabbit hole to go down. Quadriga. Check it out. It's like our Canadian FTX. To be honest, that's why the OSC is very like locked down on exchanges and doesn't allow like, you know, Binance or a lot of some of these other ones to actually operate within Ontario, right? However, let's get back to FTX, because like they're doing so, it's really bad. Like I'm talking about, like, it's like Ponzi scheme. It's not just like one bad thing they're doing. They're like laundering money. It's a Ponzi scheme. There's like, you know, it's this is so many hairy things that, you know, if I don't even really want to get into details right now, because if I do, it's so salacious. It's honestly politicized. People will automatically start having an opinion on one side or the other, right? In my opinion, I think it's that salacious. That's how bad, because quite frank, okay, so I honestly think, like, if you are in the know of crypto, you understand that basically there is a lot of illicit use of cryptocurrency markets, right? And it just, in my personal opinion, it just allegedly, I honestly think that like some intelligence firms were using cryptocurrency exchanges as dark money pools, but that's just me. That is just me. So I think FTX is like a crazy story. I think there's a lot of things we're not going to understand or know like until like a decade from now, right? But all you need to know is that it's a really, really, really bad story, and it should have been the last one. It is a homegrown American story of scammery, because this kid, right, was able to get guys like Sequoia Capital and whatnot to get involved in this. And this is the second time for me of note that these very reputable names get rolled into these honestly bullshit rigmaroles, right? And honestly, they smell it so badly. The thing is, just nobody did their due diligence. Absolutely. And you know, people like me say this all the time and everyone calls me crazy, but legitimately, rug pulls like this happen, and in the time that they do, it's just such a whole sketchy scenario, to be honest. Because like, you think a Binance does this, you think one of these dark money exchanges in like China or Russia does this. No, FTX is the one that does like a, you know, like multi-billion dollar rug pull in every extent of the word that you look at that number, right? It's really bad, right? There's a hack. Oh my God, all of it is absolutely terrible. And my concern about it, right, is that it's actually going to be used as some sort of like, you know, boogeyman story for regulators to implement regulation on markets they completely do not understand, right? And again, I will say that, you know, this is really a like weird story. This guy is super sketch. The fact that he's even right now still out, like just out and about, is really sketch, to be honest, right? Because like, where is he? You know, like, where is he? Is he literally being allowed to be seen? Like, okay, so anyhow, what I'm trying to say here is, in my opinion, you're going to see regulators use this as a story as to be implement some sort of level of like coordinated regulation. I think it's going to be trash. I think it's going to be part of their implementation of some sort of CBDC. I think a lot of us are actually seeing CBDCs come our way. I think, honestly, when I think about it, that it's inefficient for each country to have an individual CBDC. So I think what happens is that like countries like the US have a CBDC, and people buy dollar denominated debt from that CBDC. Or let's say, well, China already has one, right? So the Chinese gold backed renminbi, or the Chinese yuan, you want to call it that, they actually have a gold backed CBDC, right? So people can start taking out dollar denominated debt in that. Regardless, what I'm trying to say here is that there's always going to be an integration of blockchain technology, in my opinion, in the near future. However, they're going to use FTX's story to implement some BS like regulation. And I will say that like FTX is a very sketchy story, and it's the last one that should have happened. So the Canadian mortgage market's taking a bit of a beating right now. The last major story that I heard, Rompspin, the largest alternative lender of mortgages in Canada. So they do essentially like, you know, like your B's and C's in terms of your mortgages, right? They actually gated redemptions on their fund, which basically means that they're not allowing investors to take money out of the fund. No, for obvious reasons that, like, yes, that sounds as bad as it sounds. Well, that is as bad as it sounds. So obviously really not a good sign. They're citing essentially a slowdown in the market. You know, no new mortgages being originated. But a slowdown in mortgages being originated. And also, like, you know, it's difficulties in people refinancing considering the increase in rates, right? So there's definitely pain happening in that market. The thing, though, I think that over the long term will happen is that, like, there's definitely a basement for Canadian real estate prices, even though sales will go down, which is why I think the rental market's getting more aggressive, because essentially we're still hitting all-time highs for population numbers, right? And honestly, we're actually at, like, literally a housing deficit right now, because right now where interest rates are, it's not profitable for lenders or developers to actually get into developing new areas, right? So as more people get come into the country, right, there's going to be a higher demand for housing, but we're not really going to be developing houses at the rate that we have, like, historically, with the rates going the way they are. So I do think there's a basement for Canadian housing, and I do think the rental market's going to start getting just way more affected, because there's not going to be an ability for you to enter the market, because I think mortgage rates are going to continue to increase, because the central bank's going to continue to increase the rate until we hit, like, you know, until we're able to reduce inflation. Like, that's literally, like, their mandate right now. And as long as we see, like, you know, core inflation increasing, like, well, just in general, inflation increasing, you know, quarter over quarter, really not a good sign for where interest rates are going to be going. So, I do think, again, I'll say it again, over the long term, over the short term, definitely some pain, right? But over the long term, I do think that, like, the value of Canadian houses will start to appreciate greatly as long as we continue to immigrate the number of people that we are right now.